All right, we're good to go, guys? All right, well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for being here. Just talking to Dan, I appreciate what Dan had to say. And told Dan it struck a chord with me, because while he was talking about one point about wanting to try to fix or to flare up when somebody does something while he's speaking, I got a message from work, and it was one of those moments, and I was ready to react. No, Dan said. So, yeah, but I appreciate what Dan had to say. Said some really, really good stuff there about being a good listener and asking the right questions. I hope in what I'm going to share with you guys that you would also have questions for me. I don't want this to simply be some sort of a lecture and me just spewing information on you. I'd like for you guys to say, hey, Rob, how would you do, or what approach would you take, or what's been your experience? And just to give a little background or backstory to who I am, sometimes I think it can be helpful. Dan shared, you know, kind of what he's done in ministry, where he's been through the years. I'm obviously a little bit older than Dan, so Dan, I don't get to go off of your youthfulness there. I'll go with some of my experience I've had in ministry has been I've not been on staff at any other church other than Waypoint Church, but through the years have certainly served in various ministries, from children's ministry, student ministry, adult Sunday school teacher, served as a deacon in the church over in the big city of Pleasant Hill, Illinois. You guys know where Pleasant Hill is? And so served over there in that church for a number of years as a deacon when Don Hannell was the pastor there. And so some great memories of that and some growth that went on in the church there. And my background is in construction, if you will. Our family had a siding, window, roofing, gutter business for 60 years is what we did. And so I did that with my dad for 26 years, and then wound up just kind of coming to a point to where, out of the blue, God got a hold of me and an opportunity came about to just kind of pack up and change and do things different at the age of 51. And kind of felt a little bit like an Abraham moment. And it was going to be new career, new home, new church, new city, just starting everything all over again. And so the role that I'm in, along with getting to serve along with Dan and Jeff and Sam there at Waypoint, so I get the privilege of being the facility manager there at the church. And that's not what I did, as I mentioned, for 26 years. And so it's been a learning curve. And I don't know, you guys in the room here, anybody here who is the quote-unquote either the facility guy, director, gal, manager, whatever at your church? Is anybody that person? Nope.
We're all mostly single staff pastors, so yes.
That works. Yeah, and that's what I grew up in. So I don't want you guys thinking I'm coming from this position of going, well, what's wrong, and why don't you have a big staff? Why don't you do all this stuff with facilities? Because that's not it at all. I've been able to, as Dan said, yeah, maybe because of my advanced age, there's wisdom here. Hopefully, I've been able to see what it's like in a facility like Waypoint, where I have a part-time staff, I have full-time staff, I have volunteer staff, I have a number of people around me to help me get the job done. But I've also served in a church to where it was a church of 75 people, and as you guys feel it, to where you go, yeah, you're the pastor, and you scoop the snow, and you mow the lawn, and you paint the wall, and you clean the carpet, and you do whatever. You've got to do everything, or it feels that way. And so some of the things that I'm wanting to share with you would be, this is my take on the topic here of spaces that serve, aligning facilities with your church's mission. I think it's easy to, a lot of times, overlook the facility that we have and what we can do with it, or maybe we feel handicapped and maybe we're handcuffed, and we're not really handcuffed at all. We just got to get a little bit creative. There was an interesting survey done by a seminary in the St. Louis area, and in this survey, they looked to see the age of buildings or facilities. Bob, that's why I was asking you kind of about this building, how old it was. And this in this survey, they checked to see within a 500-mile radius what percentage of those churches, those facilities, were built before 1960. And so anybody want to shout out a guess? I want this to be a little interactive here, if you would. When it came to a 500-mile radius of St. Louis, Missouri, how many churches, doesn't matter denomination, how many of the buildings that people were dealing with were built, excuse me, before 1960? What percent do you think it was?
65, 85.
Very close right there, 80. Ooh. 80% of churches within a 500-mile radius are older than 1960. And so Dan and I get to, I mean, we get the honor of serving in something that's not quite as big and so the thing, or as old, and the things that I deal with, I'm not dealing with some of these older things. I've worked on many, many old houses, much older than 1960, you know, through the years. And the things that you ran into as to how they built them and lead paint you're dealing with and how in the world has it not burned down because of the electrical work, you know, that's been done in these things. And so through the years of seeing that, and even again in the church, even our old church that we had there in Pleasant Hill before we built, you know, the new facility that we did, because that church was built in 1919 is when that brick building went up. And one of the things here that I want to hit on whenever it comes to that says the, you know, whatever the building is, whatever the facility you're using, the number one purpose, I think, of the building and the facility is ministries of the church. It should take precedence in what you guys do, that should be the goal first, whether it's your, again, student ministry, it's children's ministry, it's adults, it's young adults, it's senior adults, whatever. But that should be your first goal as to what we're doing with this facility is for the purpose of ministry. And the building that you're using is not sacred, if we can kind of keep that in mind. I don't know the age of even your congregation that you have, but I grew up in, and I shared this with somebody recently, that building had become kind of this monument to them, and it had become so sacred. They actually, there was a lady in our church that growing up that she would correct you if you walked this area right here. Because this was like sacred ground. You walk that way, you walk this way, but you don't pass this way. And you're going, you do know this hardwood floors and it's just brick and mortar. But it had become kind of this sacred piece. And in that, what winds up happening too is that we get kind of boxed into, here's how we're going to use our facility. We're going to use our facility for Sunday morning preaching and Sunday school. We're going to use it for Sunday night preaching and maybe some youth events. And then we have Wednesday night, we're going to have a Bible study and kind of midweek, and that's it. And so that was my upbringing, was Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And that's all that the church building was used for. What I'd like to challenge all of you guys to do is to, if you're kind of in that mindset, to try to break out of that. That's what has been my position where I am, is what I like to see happen with the building is for us to get as creative as we can to use it as many ways that we can. And sometimes that's not, this is where you start to bust out of, it's not just ministry only. It is for the idea of to help fuel ministry, but sometimes we get a little creative. But what I love to see at our church is to see the parking lot full on Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays. For you guys who are kind of the main guy that does it all, you can't do that. You're going to need help. One person can't. It's a challenge for me to do it with my team of eight because there's so much. Dan knows this. He's seen the activity that happens in the building there, whether it be during the day of an evening and again on weekends. But the more that your building and your property is being used, what do you guys think that says? Do you think people in the community notice that? Because what's maybe their perception of church? If you kind of get in their head, what do they think that goes on at church? Us four and no more.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunday only.
Do what?
Sunday only.
Sunday only. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's fair. I've had a number of people that have walked through the doors. Dan's probably had the same experience. I've had people walk in before that literally just stopped in to see what was going on because it wasn't Sunday. Mm-hmm. And they saw cars in the parking lot. They saw activity going. What's happening here? And it's just simply just a curiosity. And I love that. Because it kind of breaks down those walls and those misunderstandings or those misconceptions that we've kind of created of going, this is how we do it. Because I can remember asking my dad was a solid, solid, solid godly man. But sometimes, you know, dad's answer, he'd answer my question with the question, and you're like, Dad, we're talking in circles here. And it almost became, because we have to, because we're Baptist. It's like, that's a bad answer, Dad. You know, let's try again. One of the things that I think can be helpful that we have developed there is what I would want to encourage you guys to do, because if you're going to make it more than just being about a Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, is if you don't have in place, but develop yourself a facility use policy. And so with that, do you guys have things that you do currently beyond what I'm saying, the traditional Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night are there? What are things that you guys do during the week, if anything, that kind of goes beyond that in using the facility that you have?
We have boxing, pickleball.
You have what now?
Boxing. We have a boxing gym.
Interesting. So how do you guys, that's in the building? And when do you guys do that?
Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays.
Nice. Nice. That's an interesting one. I've not heard some, but that's one of those unique ones that, again, it can be because you know that there's some interest or you're hoping there'd be interest, but you start something there that what happens with things like that, boxing, does somebody else have one that they do that's kind of a unique?
I pastor churches that have a gymnasium. We have basketball league there. A lot of homeschoolers and stuff like that get a place to play. We had an AA group that met in our building. We had a guy that headed up people that were unemployed or underemployed, and he did that ministry and stuff like that, plus a regular fair, you know, some marital counseling kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, those are good ones too.
We've done fitness ministry for 8 years. We have a boxing class 2 days a week for Parkinson's. We have a co-op, and we're developing a 24-hour prayer room.
Nice. Yeah, and these things, when you guys do these, is what you'll find is that one. Yeah, you can. I'm sure you guys can attest to this. You start to get people that walk through the door on those that wouldn't normally walk through the door because they expect Sunday, I'm going to walk in and, you know, God will strike me dead or the building will fall in if I ever showed up there. And all you're going to do is lecture me and tell me what's wrong with me, and I don't want to hear that. And so it starts to become those relational things, which I think is definitely, you know, based in Scripture. I mean, I don't know offhand where Jesus just showed up and just started hammering them with the gospel on the front end. There was always that relational piece that was meeting the physical need before we dealt with the spiritual need, and that there where you start to earn that trust. You know, when you show, whether it be through the boxing, through these meetings that you guys are doing, that you start showing people that, hey, I care, I want to know about you, I'm asking the good questions, and you start to build that relationship with them, you can then lead into that possibility, hey, of the checking out the Sunday, the checking out the Wednesday, the life group, the whatever it might be. But they can be some great icebreakers of doing these things that, again, that people don't think of that's what the church does, because the church, how I grew up, the church didn't do. Again, it was just, you know, it was these other things. And, you know, it's, in order to get somebody in there, into the building, you need to give them something, give them a reason to come in. I mean, a lost person isn't just desiring to come in and go to church with you because they don't believe you have anything that I want. And so finding these ways, building this, as I mentioned, building a facility use policy to where you guys can, whether it's the usage for your church members, whether it's usage for outside events, that it's not a specific church ministry, which again can be great ones to do if you guys aren't done, to where you can also then structure it to where, hey, there's fees associated with it, or it's a free space usage, or are we going to need people to man this event or champion this event, you know, what that's going to look like. But still keeping ministry usage number one. You don't let the outside events trump it. You know, always make sure that ministry comes first. But then making the building available to where you can have other groups come in. We do things, some of the ones that we have there at Waypoint that are not our own ministries, but again, that we've opened the building up to, we have, we're a polling place, you know, for the elections. And that's certainly an easy way to get people in. Not usually a real easy way to get conversations started, but it does get them familiar with trying to break down that barrier of going, when I step through the door, what's on the other side? So it helps with that, because we're all the same way. You go to some place you've never been before, and I don't know what I'm going to expect whenever I walk through the door. And so we use our building for a polling place. We've had Boy Scouts use it for a Pinewood Derby. We've had, there's a ladies' Bible study that meets there, and it's not our group. It's a number of churches that meets every Tuesday. So we have like 300 ladies. There's also kids that are there every Tuesday morning up until noon. We've used it even one of our rooms. It's one of the rooms that Dan uses for steps, but we also have used it. We've invited the local law enforcement to do canine training actually in the building. So we've had that. We've had the fire department visit. So we're building these relationships. We've invited local businesses. Hey, when you have a meeting, come use the coffee shop that we've got in here. Come use that space. And so what we find is, again, as you build those relationships and you have these facility use policies in place to where people can go, some of those you can take and go, yeah, I'm going to charge Logan for he and his family to have a birthday party for his kid. But if it's something here that we're going to be able to tie to, say, like a nonprofit, then that we can offer them, you know, free space usage. And it's amazing the number of people that wind up then coming back. Not that, but they got to meet with some of us. Maybe they met Dan or Sam or one of our other pastors in the lobby, and you get to have conversation. And a lot of those barriers get broken down when you make the property, when you make the building, that it's not ours. But we open this thing up more to the community to go, we want you to come in. We want you to use this. We want you to feel welcome here. And then if that can lead into hopefully a gospel conversation, if that can then lead into them going, hey, I would come check out, you know, a Sunday, you know, can also help. And, you know, don't go it alone. There can be a lot of these things here when it comes to, you know, the usage of that. Neighboring with churches around you, because you're not in competition, they're probably experiencing similar challenges. So learn from each other. We've taken the approach, me and my team, we reached out to some other churches in the area, and it was something I'm going, I'd love for somebody to do it. I felt like I didn't have time to. I'd love for somebody to take this, and a facility manager to one of the area churches took the lead on it, which I was thankfully did. But Dan Kettlecamp at Element, he took, and what he's done is we all get together. We'll have either a Zoom call or we'll meet. We'll take turns meeting each other's campuses to share ideas, share challenges. How can we take our facility and make it to where it can be better and to where ministry, you know, can thrive? And so those are ways, because what I'm hearing from you guys say is, no, so if I'm the pastor, I'm kind of the lone ranger here. I could use some help in this. That's something I would encourage you. You can even catch me afterwards and go, hey, Rob, can you get me connected with Dan so I can be part of that? Because it's a way where we can take and go online with one another. You can start a thread there and go, hey, I'm looking to have some work done on the church, or I need somebody to clear the parking lot, or I need lawn care done, or I need some painting done, or electrical. Who do you guys use? What's been your experience with? Help me out. And again, we can go to each other's campuses to see how you do what you do there. And helping, you know, make it a warm and welcoming and inviting place there. In your spaces that you use, one thing that I loved watching the video, because one thing that I saw in the renovation, I don't know how many of you saw it as well, but there was something that disappeared from this room that so glad to see pews when they leave. I grew up on pews, the old wooden, curved, they were painful. There's nothing comfortable about them. But pews are very they're restrictive. There's no flexibility in your space usage when you have pews. We worked on a mission project years ago, and the church was deciding, do we do chairs, do we do pews, do we do chairs, do we do pews? It had to be a Baptist church, because when they got done, they did both. Literally, their worship area had pews and chairs in that space. Can't make a decision. But chairs, even in this room here, I can see these chairs are not affixed to the floor, which is great and terrible, because with them being not affixed to the floor, obviously you can take this space and open this space up. You can rearrange. You can do a number of things in here. And the bad thing is that they don't stay put. Now you're constantly having to straight rows back up, whatever. There are not that many chairs here. But chairs are a great thing. Looking at your spaces to make things to where it's more flexible opens it up for those other events. You know, because you could take this space here and, you know, open it up. This could be a polling place between here and the room next here. This could be, again, for a Sunday morning as it is set up. But again, it could be for maybe like what we do there, where we have some ladies groups, and you could have some sort of convo and circle up chairs over here. You can circle up back there. But this space here could be used for a number of things simply because you're not restricted to having, you know, pews, you know, lock you down. But it makes groups feel full, maximizes seating capacity. So this is great. I'd suggest that do any of you guys still have pews in the church you're in? Anybody got that left? You guys still have the pews? Is everybody good with that? Have you guys ever even entertained the thought of?
No, they have new pews.
New pews?
Yeah, we were running out of seats, and so we had to get more seating.
Right.
So we got bigger pews. I urged and pushed for chairs, but...
It's hard to change. Yeah. And it's hard to change. I know years ago, before I was there, when Waypoint was First Baptist Harvester, they had pews. And I think it might have... Dan, when did... How long... You weren't there yet when they still had pews? I think Bob Engel got there whenever the pews were still there. And that was one of the things he wanted to change. Let's get rid of that. And they crucified him over it. And then the people that hated him for it then later came back and said, these are fantastic and they're so comfortable and this is amazing.
Well, it's funny now because we have several people, because we've had issues already with the pews, and a lot of people are like... Wish we would have went to chairs.
Yeah, like I say, chairs are great. We've even taken with ours, and we have four patterns of chairs. They're not all the same, and kind of the idea behind that is because it's so random. From my side, it's amazing because if you have one that gets stained or ruined or whatever, you can swap it out. And if there's a little bit of a color variation, you don't put two of the same next to each other. And so you don't wind up having fabric issues and whatever, you know, so you can kind of move that around. Mm. But the pews can be a hard one to get. And we struggled with that years ago in Pleasant Hill. We had those pews. And again, it was this mosque, this mausoleum that everybody's like, oh, we love this building. You can't walk here and you can't do this. And don't talk in church and be quiet and don't run. And all those things you couldn't do in there because they said so. And when we built the new building, people wanted to go, let's take those pews with us. No, let's burn them. You know, it's like, so unfortunately, we had enough people as years went by that some of the older dyed in the wool, it has to be this way and we can't change and we won't be moved on. They died off. And all of a sudden then you went, hey, there's enough young people that go, no, why would we do that? And went with the chairs in the new one. And like I said, and once you have them, people love them. But they're definitely fantastic in being able to have that flexibility in your space. So if you guys have it, great. If you can ever get your folks to go that direction, it's a huge win. And again, it's just another one of those components. What it does is it helps you do ministry more than we're just having church in this room, because now we're flexible to do all kinds of other things, you know, within the space there.
What?
Yes, sir.
I hear what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it. Having said that, mm-hmm. one of the things that was profitable for me, I had to take a class in seminary, and I will tell you, I hated that class. Mm-hmm. I'll also tell you, I got more out of that class than probably about any other thing. And what came up was if you had hard, you know, the derogatory on pews is they're hard. That's mm-hmm. the biggest thing, and they're not mobile, and it limits your space, but having... My point is this, is that what your pews are made of and what you put on the floor is going to impact profoundly your worship service and your budget. Because if you've ever sung in a cathedral or been in a cathedral where singing was occurring, the acoustics can be phenomenal with harder services.
Mm-hmm.
And learn to modify. Is there a way that you can think of where you can modify? Because part of what happens is, and why I mentioned the budget is, is because if you got a lot of padding on the floor and you got padding on the seats, I was actually in the church, a Baptist church, ran probably 1,000 up in Rapid City, South Dakota. And I'm not exaggerating. They had not only carpeting on the floor, not only padded pews on the seat, padded pews on the back, but they ran carpeting at least 6 feet up the wall. Mm-hmm. And that auditorium, I don't know about the people, but I can tell you the auditorium was dead. And it's like, you have to have, in a building that big, you had to spend a massive amount of money on your PA system and speaker system just so you could push out enough sound. And it's an aggravation, but you have to, people want to hear the body mm-hmm. and the chorale that's developed in their building. And if you've got a lot of padding, you don't get that.
Yeah, it's a, to your point, it is that it is an acoustical challenge. Years ago, when I was in high school, our band, the band teacher that I had, he had a group of us play, and we were going to play in our church. That old church was hardwood floors, wood pews, vaulted ceiling. He loved the room, to your point, acoustically.
Yeah.
He loved the room. He's like, oh, this is amazing, and what you hear. And so when it comes from an acoustical standpoint, you're right. There's the trade-off of going, if we're going to soften this and soften this and soften this, now we've got to spend money on this here. And so don't disagree. The you can still have maybe even some of those harder surfaces if a person's going acoustically to help out. What we don't want to do is get it so rigid, though, to where you know, kind of the back to that thing of going, can the space be flexible to do for more than, you know, especially when you have a smaller building. Even with a bigger building, Dan knows this, as we schedule to have things, our building's about 120,000 square feet is what the building is. And we never have enough room, do we, Dan? It's like, I need to use this space. That space is taken. I need to use this space. I need to use this space. And it's like, no matter where you go, it's like, because as you grow and as things go on, you need space. So what we have to do then is start to go, well, I'd like to use, we don't want to lock spaces down to where it can only be used as this,
yeah.
You know, is what we don't want to do. Nor to get, I may get ahead of myself, nor do we want to get territorial about our spaces, you know, to where this is the youth only. That's a bad thought. This is children's only. No, because you want to be able to have it to where we can have an event where that space works. We can have a breakout session. We want to use this space here because it's large enough to, again, have the canine training or the whatever you're doing, or the Dan can have a space that he's got Discover Waypoint going on. We want to be able to fill this room full of tables, and if we have these spaces that are only designed specifically and not designed to be flexible, then you just wind up locking your ministries down, and then that's a loss, you know, at that point. But no, I hear what you're saying, you know, on that. There's definitely a trade, you know, in it. It's not, yeah, chairs aren't the perfect answer, but they certainly do give the flexibility beyond what pews, you know, do give us. One of the things I had here was, you know, to be proactive with community engagement. And like I said, I keep referring back to that Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. If you guys have this sign up, I'm sorry, I hate the sign. I'll get it out there. And that sign is, if you put it out in front there, that says something along the lines that everyone welcome. I think we know that. You know, when we put those things out there, I think what somehow subconsciously we think, if I put that out there, that gives me the pass on being evangelistic or going. Because, well, we put it out there that everybody's welcome. I don't know why they don't come in. You know, I think it's in Luke 14, 14:23, where it said, the Lord said to his servant, go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. That there's a call to action to go get people, go find people. So I even think about that highways and hedges. I think the hedges, I mean, you got to get in there to find them. Where we are out here in the middle of the sticks, there's still people out there, you know, you just got to go get them. And they're not, like I said, the most part, people don't just drive by your church and go, oh, I said, everybody's welcome. I think I'll pull in. People aren't going to do that. when you go out there and compel, you know, I love the word compel, give them a reason to come in. And give them something there that you know. You guys have got this niche going. We know guys who like this boxing. Go get them, you know. And the more you talk to the guys who come, you can get more people and more people, and then you'll find other avenues of other ministries that you can branch off of and learn from that. Some of the, you know, the ways that you can be proactive, you know, is to where you can offer into your facility, to where you can offer, and these are things that we do. So I'm just giving you things from my experience, where you can do graduations for some of your schools, Christian schools, private schools, homeschoolers, funerals that you can do. The church that we built in Pleasant Hill, one of the goals was we wanted to build this nice big fellowship hall where there could be a meal there and a big worship center where we had lots of seating. So it's like 300 in seating and a nice big fellowship hall. What happened was the local funeral home, they can only handle so many people. But when they found out that we have this facility, we opened that up to, there are so many funerals that happen in that church now because it's accommodating. We've got a kitchen for the meal. We've got a big fellowship hall. We've got, and again, you've made the doors open to get people where they can come in, where you can have those gospel conversations with people. And it was all over, you know, a funeral that would have normally been at another location, but we didn't just make it so rigid that we're just church or just church services. Mm-hmm. Weddings, baby showers. I mentioned the women's Bible study, fire protection, the police training, hosting events. We've had school concerts. We've even had in our worship center, we had it because it accommodated. There was a large, I guess, soccer organization. It's kind of a nationwide deal, and they wanted to use it and have this keynote speaker to some famous soccer player. I don't know soccer, so it didn't mean anything to me. It meant everything to everybody else that was there. So, you know, 1,000 people wanted to hear this guy. Again, doors opened up. You got people in the community that may never come into your church, except that drew them in. And again, don't miss the opportunities when they're in the building then to – don't just let them walk in and walk out, but, you know, create those conversations. If possible, have something. I know that North Road, I know we do. How many of you guys have some sort of coffee shop, coffee? I don't care what it is. You have free coffee on a Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. I don't know. I'm not the big coffee drinker, but I guess like the other 99% of people are. My wife being one, and if you offer something like that, those are great things to just get people to, you know, walk through the doors there for. Is it free coffee? Buy a coffee. What is it?
Free
coffee.
We do both.
You guys do both. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it would be. I think it would be great. I'd mentioned it to a couple of other staff people. To take their, like I said, this way of going out and compel them, print you up some, I don't know, some gift cards for a free coffee or some sort of deal, and you're at Quick Trip at the gas pump or whatever, and hey, and a good morning and whatever, and hey, you know, if you're in the area, I'd love to have you stop by, this is on us or whatever, boom, and pass the things out. Man, people love the stuff. So, you know, but try to get creative in ways you can go, hey, I just want you to walk through the door, there's no obligation or anything, this is just on us. You know, but do stuff like that. As I'd mentioned, you know, keep and make your spaces flexible. The seating in the worship area is not fixed floor. You know, it can open things up for more space. Keep your spaces not so ministry again and specific rigid, as I'd mentioned there. Maintenance and planning. When you guys are having to do this with spaces, and you're having, you know, the more you use it, of course, the more maintenance and upkeep that this thing is going to take. Do you guys practice any kind of like regular assessments when it comes to, you know, so be proactive, not reactive on your building, the condition, identify needs so that they don't all of a sudden just like, oh no, the roof is leaking. Do you guys have any kind of, anything in place where you're proactive about walkthroughs of your campus, making sure things look good? Does anybody do anything like that?
Yeah, we do. They're not on a super regular scheduled basis, but probably once a quarter-ish, the guy who serves in facilities at our church. It'll go through and check everything out, make recommendations, hey, we probably ought to address this. You know, this could be a potential issue when it starts to get colder outside. And that's one benefit of that was that led to us finding out that there was a leak, and I don't know whatever the main valve is called that actually brings the water supply into your building, mm-hmm. and it needed to be replaced. place that if he wouldn't have done that, we would have known it would have continued to go on and become a larger and larger problem.
Right. Yeah, that's something I would encourage. I mean, there's a number of ways that you can do things where you can do an assessment of going, here's how old our roof is, here's how old the water heater is, or maybe our HVAC equipment, some of those things that you can go through, or our floor coverings, our seating. You can either just manually create charts, or I know there are some certain software programs that we use that can be a little on the pricey side, you know, to have that, but then we can plug all that stuff in and know that, hey, we can time things out, and in 20 years, we're probably looking at replacing a water heater. But whatever you do as far as that, I would highly suggest having something set up. It's a group of guys. There's several areas here when it comes to your facility that it's a great way to get people to serve. You know, usually when you're looking to get people to plug into ministry, they're thinking, oh, no, you want me to teach a class or preach or serve as a deacon or whatever. And there's a lot of work to be done as far as lay people go, say, hey, we need somebody who has an eye for that. Maybe that's what you do for a living, but to be able to walk through, to point out, to notice, hey, we need to have this on our radar. The carpet's getting worn. Hey, the chairs, because what you don't want to do is just let it go. Because again, we're wanting this to be welcoming, inviting when people walk in. And, you know, we can only afford what we can afford, but still at the same time, we don't want to just let the facility that we have that God's given us should just let it get broken down and uncared for. And so Logan and I were talking earlier where I think what happened here is a great idea. And I think if we did more of that, we go, hey, we've got this project, something we're going to work on. Let's reach out to the other churches in the area, because we've got guys and gals all over the place that would love to come and serve and do and work on things together, you know, with each other. Also, it's going to help you with your budgeting and planning your repairs if you have those quarterly, annually, you know, some sort of a walkthrough there to help with that. And simple maintenance plans, regular inspections, upkeep is essential in keeping the facility safe, well cared for, and inviting to your guests. And that's the thing we want to do as well. So when we're taking and trying to have this facility used more and more for ministry, one of the things that you want to make sure of is definitely that we're keeping this safe for our guests to come into. And Dan and I have been dealing with a struggle right now. We had an unfortunate thing we found out on our campus is one of the rooms that Dan uses a lot because he has larger groups is in planning for Christmas Eve. We're like, hey, this may be an overflow room. How many chairs can we fit? And in finding that out, we realized that one of our doors had the wrong hardware, which meant it wasn't actually a fire exit like it was posted as. So our room that would seat 300, now because that door is not to code, 49 people. So you got a big room and you only put 49 people in it because of that. They can be very frustrating when you bump into those things, but at the end of the day, what we're looking at is, now of course we got to fix that, but what we're wanting to do is we're wanting to make sure that the campus is safe. We want to make sure that, you know, fire exits are posted, that we do have fire extinguishers, that it's sprinkled if it needs to be sprinkled, that our child care is a safe space. We do have, you know, things like that in place to make sure that we're taking care of our guests.
Have you installed those things for like heart attack and stuff like that in your building yet?
We have. So we have, across the campus, we've got 7 first aid kits. I think we now have 5 AED devices. We recently, even they're rather inexpensive. We've added to all of our first aid kits in the past month. It's actually, if somebody's choking, it's actually it's a little suction thing you put over your face. So we put those at our St. Charles campus and the campus we have out in Winsville now, and those are added to those as well. And we try to keep those in all of the areas where more than likely there's either a kitchen nearby or it's a kid's space because they'd be eating a jawbreaker or a piece of gum or something like that. And so it's those things, and what can happen as you walk around the campus, and so to that, then it kind of gets people thinking, going, well, a first aid kit, is that enough? Well, what if somebody's having a heart attack? Hey, we got to look into an AED device. Well, what if choking? But it starts getting people thinking, how can we make this safe? How can we keep this? We have like a safety team. We have first aid bags actually under chairs in the worship center, so that instead of having to run to it, we've got somebody who's kind of manning that. So should something happen right in the service, we've got somebody in the service who's at the ready, you know, to meet that. We do.
Sorry, I'm wearing my church business administrator hat right now.
Yes. Yeah. So we have training for first aid. Once a year, we'll have a first aid class. We have, a number of, it's not on the training side. We even have one of our local police officers, a sergeant. She comes in and this is another one of those things, ministry. She comes with our senior adults, with Pastor Jeff, and she does about a 30-minute deal on how not to get scammed, that she'll do with our senior adults, because that's kind of, again, a target. So what happens, you kind of get the word out on that. Well, what senior doesn't want to know about that, you know, because you get those phone calls and stuff all the time. It's another ministry opportunity, another way to get people, you know, into the building, you know, to be able to minister to them as well. This is one personally that I've had some fun with that I would encourage you guys to look into doing. And do you guys ever get any phone calls from somebody going, hey, I got into a little bit of trouble, I need to do some community service?
Oh, yeah.
You guys get it?
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys leaned into that any?
Tried a little bit. It's always like, yeah, but what am I supposed to do?
You guys do it some?
Yeah, but I let them know that you got to adhere to my schedule, I'm not adhering to yours. So whenever I'm available, yeah, you come up.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we do, and the same thing. And it just has to be that way. We do more and more, and I currently have actually two people that are doing some community service there on our campus. Whether it's community service or volunteer, then everybody has to have a background check done on them. It doesn't matter who you are. If my wife wants to volunteer for something, background check, or again, community service because I got in trouble for whatever. And we'll set certain criteria. Dan's on our pastoral council. And if we get something that's like, we go, hey, this may be, you know, because, I don't know, they've got a murder charge. I'm going to pass this over to the pastoral council to go, we're going to hear from you guys. I'm not going to make the call on that one. But if it's some guy comes along and he says, I got a speeding ticket. Okay, this is an easy one I can help you out with. They do have to go with our schedule. And then what we typically do, though, we don't just simply turn somebody loose and say, hey, come here and you need how many hours and go clean some tables or the toilets. I take and partner them with somebody on my team. So even if you don't have a facilities team, if you can get somebody who, again, in your church would go, hey, I'd love to do that, or they can come and volunteer some time with the individual. I partner, you know, female with female, male with male. What it does also for my team members is it also encourages them to be more evangelistic, share the gospel, share your faith. You're going to be working side by side. I don't care how much stuff they do for us. That's not the point. They're on our campus. We get to pour into them, and we've seen through it. We've seen a number of people come to Christ through it. We saw somebody who was a believer that had fallen away and rededicated and got baptized. He's there every Sunday morning in an adult Sunday school class now. We've just had a number of, and I've even taken it to this step, and it's probably the salesman in me from back in the day, but I've even taken with my volunteers or those who need community service that, hey, here's what we'll do. You need how many hours? In fact, if you come on a Sunday and help us out, which isn't a whole lot, but you go to a service, I count that as double time. Hey, guess what happens? They show up on Sunday. You know, do a whole lot. Go to church. I'll count it as twice your hours. Sweet, you know. And so we do that. And I've got a young lady right now that needed a bunch of hours for a DUI. And guess what? She's there during the week, but she's going to be there this Sunday and next Sunday because she gets double time for it. She's going to sit into the preaching. And you go, sound like you're tricking. I'm not tricking anybody. You don't have to come. I'm just offering something to you. Just offering it, you know. And here you go. And if you get saved out of it, gee, I'm sorry. You know, it's like, so it's another one of those again. And so I have notified like St. Charles, like the juvenile department, because they tell me they have a tough time finding places that will do this. I'm like, well, if nobody's going to take them, then I'll take them. It seems like this is just wide open for us to be able to minister. And so again, so we'll get some teenagers there that can help as well in that. And like I said, it just gives another opportunity to take and use our facility, use our staff, use our people to just help, you know, to help reach people with the gospel. So, you know, aligning, you know, at the end of the day, you know, aligning what you're wanting to do with your facility is align it with your church's mission. What is your goal? What are you guys trying to do in your church? What's number one that you're trying to do? Is it to create a country club, to have good coffee? What's the purpose of doing what you do? My dad used to tell the story. I don't know where this church was that he knew of, but it was an older church, and I kind of heard even. So I'm not saying it was the same situation, Rob, with who was here before, but I couldn't help but think about it again, and I had it here in my notes. But my dad told the story of a church that just kept kind of shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and they finally decided they were going to have a meeting one night, and they were going to discuss, do we continue to be a church, or do we just lock the doors and go home? And they met, and they voted on, and they voted to just close up shop and cease to exist. And there was a 80-year-old lady in the church that was there that night, and when they walked out, she pinned a note to the front door of the church that said, out of business, because we didn't know what our business was. And so I think of that whenever, so like I said, growing up in a small church, it doesn't mean that it just stays small. And once we even talked about this in a leadership meeting recently, or all staff, you know, we're not just looking to just fill this room and go, hey, we've kind of arrived. It's kind of the, in this room, there's how many seats in here, Rob? Do you know what this seats?
Right now I think we have 77 seats.
77 seats. So 77. So does this room only hold 77? No, because see, you could actually seat like 154 if you had two services. You could actually seat over 200 if you did three services. You could actually, you know. So sometimes we have a tendency to look and go, we can only do this with this. Well, that's not necessarily true. So how can you get creative to do more in what you've got, and then maybe God bless you to where you go, no, we can build on, or he gives us another piece of property, you know, because even Waypoint, you know, started out, if my memory is right, Dan, that it started out, what, in an old turkey coop once upon a time, and then that moved into like a ranch house that they used, and they built the one piece on the property, and then build on. I doubt that the guys and gals that met in the turkey coop ever dreamed that it would be a church of, say, 3,000 people, and so, but it's just that forward vision going, what can we do with what God's given us, how can we take and help ministry to thrive, and using, you know, these buildings, using our facilities is just an instrument in helping to do that. But being creative with that, that's what I would encourage you guys to do. Some of these things that I'd mentioned to you, even if it was something that might even help the community, if you did something like with your facility to do like a, I'd love to see us do it as kind of like a, it's almost like a, like an expo meets a trunk or treat meets a job fair, where you just take and you have a big blowout deal at your church, pick whatever time of year, and you have all of your ministries showcase what they do. You have your children's ministries set up to do something, your student ministries, your senior adult, your ladies, your men, your young adults, whatever it is, and have them there. You could have whatever bounce houses and candy you want to give away or whatever it might be. But then the community can come in and find out, oh, you have divorce care. Oh, you guys do a care class. Oh, you guys have something for kids. Oh, you have four. And you can kind of pick, they can pick and choose to see, oh, I thought you guys are just about Sunday night and Wednesday night. But to break that down to go, no, we are way more than that, and we have something here for you.
Quick question, Rob, kind of coming back to some of the particulars of, what are some of the ways, the things that you guys have thought about that have led you guys to choose the things that you do as those community engagement elements?
Okay.
Thinking particular, like, again, what are the needs in the community? How do I find that out? Just kind of that thing, just kind of pull that whole process of considering that, thinking through that, and being able to come to those. I really feel like this would be a great way that we could reach our community with the space that we have. You know, like, what does that look like?
I think some of it for us has been the people that we've seen come through the doors. The Dan mentioned that point there, being the good listeners. Whenever we have folks walk in to hear, you know, I love for people to tell. Dan knows I love a good story, and I love to tell a good story in way more time than it probably should be done. And so, but I love to hear who you are, where you're from, and to try to at least paint a picture. Who's in the neighborhood? What's going on? Kind of be aware of what's around you. You know, can certainly be helpful in that. And then once you start to see some of that, where you go, oh, somebody came in looking for some community service. Well, what can I do to go get more of them? Do I just simply sit here and wait on them? Or no, I could get a hold of the local, you know, law enforcement, talk to them. I think they just become kind of dot to dot. So as I talk to them about that, then I hear them say something about canine training. Oh, do you guys need something for that? Which leads to, you know, which leads to something about the fire department. Oh, there's that. So I think a lot of these just start kind of building on top of each other. Once you get one, pay attention to what else is going on around you.
Yeah.
The people that are coming in, again, to where you guys see guys come in that love boxing, you may go, pay attention, mm-hmm. you know, to go, there's something we could do with that.
Right.
And yeah, sometimes guess what? They don't work. Try something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, I know all of us guys, you like to win. I want to win. And guess what? You lose at some of these things and they just don't work out. But again, try something else. You know, just keep looking for that, kind of find that niche that works for you, and look around and see what other people are doing.
One question for you on that, on just some of the community stuff. Thinking about church communication in general, are those things that you guys are communicating to the body at large? Are those things that just kind of more so get circulated word of mouth? How does the engine get put behind those
things there?
Yeah,
the ones from my team, it's just basically amongst us.
Okay.
You know, the things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try to then build off of, like, I'm not the one thinking about coffee, but if we're gonna have a coffee shop, then it's usually going, okay, what part could we play in that? How can we use that, mm-hmm. you know, as well? So that's typically kind of how some of that stuff, you know, happens. So we try to get ideas off of each of the ministries, Dan's ministry or children's ministries or student ministries. And again, what can we do that we can kind of piggyback, you know, off of it? You know, for the most part, what we're doing on that facility level is, at the end of the day, is we're just trying to do everything that we can that facilitates, obviously, every ministry that's going on. We don't want to be the one that's seen, because that's not the point. We want to make sure that whenever ministry happens in the church, that the doors were open, the sidewalk was clear, the carpet was clean, the room was set, the heater, the air was on, everything was ready. So again, I keep using Dan, but when Dan walks into the space, I don't want him showing up wondering, did Rob remember to turn the air on? Did Rob remember I needed 12 tables? Did he? I want him to be able to go, I don't want to think about that stuff. I can just walk in and do. So we're kind of hopefully the ones behind the scene to make sure that it happens. You don't want to be seen. You don't want to be, oh, the carpet's dirty, there's no toilet paper in the bathroom. Then you're seen. And it's bad when we're exposed. So we don't want to be. So that people walk in and these things, it's just kind of expected. You know, we're kind of mom, if you will. You know, you never thought about, does mom have my lunch ready? Does mom have my bed made or my clothes clean or whatever? It just was. And that's kind of the role that we want to play to support ministry. So when Dan has an idea to go, hey Rob, I'm thinking about this class or this or whatever, so he can come to me and go, what can you guys do to help me win at that? That's what we want to do, is we want to come alongside him and we want to be that support for him, so that this thing goes off great and Dan's able to share the gospel, Dan's able to have these classes and these meetings and stuff, and nobody's thinking about us, because that doesn't need to be thought about. We want the focus to be on what he's trying to do, you know. So, yes, sir.
You kind of might have said something, kind of glancing at it. I want to come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you intentionally integrate the people that he's training in your graded Sunday school so that there's somebody in that group? So if somebody's needing counseling, there's somebody there that's familiar with that group, familiar with those people. And if there's a need for, don't hear elder in this, but if there is a need for intentional pastoral care, it could be offered in that class. Are you guys doing anything like that?
Are you looking at me?
I'm looking at you, because I think it would lean more your direction than my direction.
I think your question is, when we open our facility, we've got people who are church and unchurched. And so in that, there's potential for conversations. Is that what I hear you say?
Yes.
And do we have a network of people that can then come in and step into that space?
Yes.
Yes, we would do that in a variety of ways. Through life group leaders, our care mentors, through Bible study leaders, through our deacons, through our staff. So all of that, the answer is yes. It would be dependent upon what type of need is there.
And that's what, just in my world, in our ministry, and the people that we would deal with, whether it be community service, volunteers, or whatever, those conversations that we have as we're working side by side with them, as conversations pop up, there's going to be a certain point as to where we will tap out and go, hey, I want to get you in contact with Dan, or the student pastor, or the lead pastor, the campus pastor, our children's ministry leaders, whatever, to go, hey, this would be more their strong suit. But again, just to be that maybe first point of contact, you know, for them, and then to get them in contact with who would be better than maybe even my team is what it would be.
Thank you, Rob.
Anything else? Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for that.